Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Kristen Higgins. She's a best-selling author, and she's out with her brand new novel, Always the Last to Know. It takes us to, obviously, Connecticut, and where a lot of Kristen's books are set. Kristen, the Frost family in this book, there's a lot of dynamics going on. John and Barb, the parents, and Sadie and Juliet, the children. Can you kind of introduce us and tell us where we find them as the action opens?
Sure. So picture this. Your husband has a stroke, and you're in the hospital waiting room, and his phone lights up with a text, and that's when you learn he's having an affair. That is the opening situation for Barb Frost, who's been in a stale marriage for decades. And she's also got her daughters with her, Juliet, who's in her 40s, a successful architect, who's just starting to have some professional issues. She's been bumped off her throne by a younger, more beautiful, less talented architect. And she's actually keeping the secret that she knows about her father's affair. And then there's Sadie, who's Dad's favorite. She's a struggling artist in New York City, and just hero worships her dad. So these three women come together around the patriarch's illness and have to figure out this new normal and deal with the family dynamics that they've always had. Sadie is sort of the lesser child in her own eyes. Juliet was perfect, did everything right. She's more of a butterfly without a lot of focus. And I think, you know, my editor said, this is the story of everyone's family. We're all going to have to deal with this at some point. Marriage, professions, family roles, aging parents, stale marriage. And it's about, you know, trying to be everything for everyone and how impossible that is. And it's also about friendship and how that's sometimes the glue that keeps life together when everything else is failing. And I'm really happy to say it's people's book of the week, and my 20th novel, which seems astonishing. I can't believe I've written 20 books.
It's been a fantastic ride so far. You have these families like this, like the Frosts, and they're not unlike a lot of families. There's a lot of secrets in families, and I don't think there's any one reason that secrets are kept within families, but do you see the motivation for everybody keeping secrets here? John's motivation to keep the affair secret, that's obvious. But, you know, Juliet keeping that secret, what do you think her motivation is to do that?
Well, you know, she adores her mom, and she doesn't want to deliver this blow to her. And I think, you know, even when we're grown children, you look at your parents and you want them to be the way you've always seen them. And shattering that illusion is really difficult, you know, and she thinks she's got children of her own, and how will this affect Grammy and Grandpa's relationship with her kids, who are tweens. And, you know, when is the right time to say, by the way, Mom, Dad's having an affair, you know? And it also, for Juliet, I think it throws her own life into relief. You know, if her father, who she always saw as steadfast, if he can have an affair, then what about her own marriage? What about, you know, is anybody safe? So, you know, she's dealing with a lot. She's one of those women who is trying to juggle career, kids, happy marriage, you know, volunteerism. And I think that's a pressure a lot of women face, is this idea of, you know, yes, I can do it. Sure, I'll volunteer for that committee. Yes, I will bake those gluten-free cupcakes for my kids' class, you know. And it's a lot. It's a lot. And I think for Juliet, she has to learn that, you know, imperfection is okay. And she's good enough the way she is. She doesn't have to, you know, be perfect in every corner of her life. I think secrets in families are absolutely fascinating, you know. The things that you learn as you grow, the way you view your adults and your family and the way that changes, and the things you don't want those closest to you to know for fear that it will change your life and how they view you as well.
The character of Connecticut, this coastal Connecticut town, plays a very big role in the novels, as setting does in a lot of your novels. How much of this story is dependent on the fact that it's set where it is?
Well, Stoneham, the fictional town, is this very small, precious little New England town. It's what you picture when you think of a little town in Connecticut. It's fairly wealthy. It's got the five-generation townies. It's got the new money. And it creates an interesting dynamic of defining you, of everybody knowing your business, you know, what it means to be successful in this town. And I grew up in a small town in Connecticut, and I live in that town still. And, you know, it's interesting. My sister actually lived in Sioux City for a couple of years, and the difference in sensibilities in different parts of the country are so striking. And I think, you know, Connecticut is very typical in New England, where, you know, people are neighborly, maybe not friendly. And then, like, when we Yankees go out to the Midwest, we're like, my God, everyone is so nice here. The conversations last forever. You know? People are better at talking, you know, in the Midwest. So I think that the town definitely plays into that feeling of how you're supposed to be and some silent judgment, maybe.
We also see the different roles and of the people in here. Now, obviously, the family is predominantly female. So as those roles develop, the role between the siblings, we see it with sisters in the book, and their role has changed, their relationship has changed over the course of their lives. So the fact that they're both sisters, does that make them more tendency to have a rivalry versus if they were of opposite genders?
You know, I think it does. I think that when you're the same gender as your sibling, there's a natural comparison. And Julia and Sadie are 12 years apart. So in some ways, they had a completely different childhood. Juliet's dad was working a lot when she was little. It was just her and her mom. And when Sadie was born, John had more time. He was semi-retired. So he got to have his darling girl. And I do think that you look at your sister and you always envy them, and without knowing maybe that she envies you too. So Sadie looks at Juliet, she calls her perfection from conception, because Juliet has never made a misstep. She always had a plan. She always knew what she wanted to do, where she wanted to go to school, the guy she wanted to marry. Everything fell into place for her, and she worked really hard to get it. And Sadie, by comparison, is more of a butterfly kind of person. She just sort of floats and drifts on the wind. She wants to be an artist in New York City, which is such an elusive dream, you know, to make it in that city, in that field. And both sisters look at each other and think at some point, I wish I had your life. You know, you've had it so easy. You have everything. And they're completely different. So I think that's a very common theme to compare yourself with your sibling and think that kid had it easier our whole lives.
I'm chatting with Kristen Higgins about her brand new novel, Always the Last to Know. It's her 20th novel, and it is available now wherever your fine books are sold. Kristen, when you have a family like this, and us as the reader, I almost feel like the voyeuristic person. And, you know, despite about people being nice in Sioux City, everybody everywhere loves to be voyeuristic when it comes to people's families. And, you know, if somebody's going through a divorce or some other type of bad time, the rumor mill starts and everybody thinks they know everything about it. So is that kind of what you've tapped into here, is tapping into the reader's insatiable desire to kind of know what goes on behind closed doors? And with this particular book, we actually know because we're seeing it firsthand, as opposed to the rumor mills that always seem to start in these situations?
Right. Yeah, you know, I think that there absolutely is that element of human nature where you want to know the whole story, and that your ears prick up and you say, what? They're getting a divorce? Them? You know, and I'm of an age where, you know, I'm an empty nester now, and a lot of my friends are going through divorces. You know, they've held it together for the kids. The kids are in college, and now things are falling apart on the marital front. And I really wanted to write about marriage and infidelity and kind of how that develops, and definitely that the inside scoop, you know, why does a man married for almost 50 years decide to have an affair now? When did the marriage go off the rails? It was never horrible, but when did it really become past redeeming? And how much work does it take to keep a happy marriage? You know, Juliet has everything color-coded and scheduled, you know, in order to keep her world going. And Sadie, with her love interest, her first love, Noah, you know, their love was never in question, but they were never able to make the relationship work. And Sadie, you know, knows that she's judged by her town, you know, the girl who broke Noah's heart. Noah's so popular and fifth-generation family carpenter, like salt-of-the-earth kind of guy. So there's a lot of that, as you said, the character of the town, judging, watching, making their assessments. And I love the idea of giving you that insider perspective. And one of the things I did in this book is I gave John a perspective, you know, this post-stroke man who's 75 years old. And, you know, he's had a significant brain injury. And I really loved writing his perspective because I wanted to see what it would be like to be left in that shadow of your former self and what your thought process would be at that point. And that was really satisfying to write. And I have to admit, it was also, you know, he regrets having his affair, and that was sort of a nod to my friends who've been going through a divorce, because what every scorned wife wants to hear is, I was wrong. I'm sorry.
You know, as I read it, and I read from the different perspectives here, I couldn't help but thinking that any one of these characters could have carried the story by themselves, and you didn't choose to write it that way. Was that a big decision in your head as to give the multiple perspectives versus just giving one character's?
You know, I never make that decision before I start writing a book. I really let the characters kind of evolve and see how much they have to say and if they need their own point of view. And this story is about a family, so to tell it from one person's perspective didn't seem to represent the whole breadth and depth and perspectives of what that family dealt with, how they were raised, and how they grow and change during this story, during this crisis. All of my books have a really uplifting message, and, you know, in this day and age, with all the trouble and uncertainty that we're going through as a nation, I think we need to read a book that tells you it's going to be okay, you're going to get through this, and you're going to be better than you were before. I think that's a message that I, as an author, believe. I'm a very optimistic and hopeful person, and I think we all need to hear that message these days, that we can get through this, and we're going to end up better. And that's what the Frost women do in Always the Last to Know.
How developed were all these characters before you even started putting pen to paper or your fingers to the keyboard?
I always have sort of an idea of who they are, like a skeleton. You know, Sadie will be the artist in New York, and Juliet will be the, you know, woman with a plan, the architect and wife and mother, and Barb will be, you know, the first selectman of the town and, you know, everything perfect except for her marriage. And then it takes me about 200 pages of writing to really start to know who they are and really ask the questions of, why are you like this? What was it in your past or your childhood that made you so determined to have a certain kind of life or to shy away from certain expectations, do something different? I never really know the characters until I've spent some time with them, and that's usually about the 200-page mark.
So how are you spending your quarantine time? Reading, writing, both?
Yeah, I finished a book during the quarantine, a book that will come out next summer, and I've been reading a lot. I mean, books have just really saved my sanity the past few months. You know, I think that I tend to read books with positive messages, and I just have really lost myself in some wonderful books this past spring and late winter. I think that, you know, reading is part of self-care, and we don't really know it until we're in a book and we say, that was a great couple of hours spent, you know, or 15 minutes, you know, or whatever it is. But it's a really important part of taking care of yourself. It stimulates the brain, and, you know, and when you read a positive story, an uplifting story, like Always Left to Know, I think you're better off for it.
All right. Well, Kristen's book is Always the Last to Know. The book's available now wherever your fine books are sold, and you can enjoy it as the hot weather gets here and summer starts. Kristen Higgins, fantastic novel here. I enjoyed it tremendously, and thanks for joining us to talk about it.
Thank you, Brian. Have a great day.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time. Always the last to know.